It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Hot diggity dog, both the streams are running hot and true, both at White Rose Society and HeadOn.live. That means we should be cooking with gas at TuneIn and Stitcher and Roku and, goodness gracious me, FYINation.com. And we're ready to roll for a Titanic Tuesday, this particular one being the 17th day of July, 2018. This is The Horn, the Head On Radio Network. We live at headon.live. That's where you go if you'd like to pick yourself out a screen name and a password. And jump into the madcap, merry, wacky, zany, real-time, multimedia, screwball extravaganza that is The Horn chat room during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. If you do pick out a screen name and a password and you do jump in, the early arrivers will greet you. That would be Anatole and Hoghead and the Prens and Will in Chicago, all capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although a spacing guild master, is a spacing guild master with good common sense enough not to fold space into a 106-degree man cave this afternoon. So he's staying in the cool comfort of Planet Sparky. Yes. You'll also be moderated by midweek pinch-hit utility chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve, from Georgistan. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. I'm in there, too. And come on by. You'll have a great time. It's a nice conversation. Let's see. Housekeeping. Thank yous to send out. Thank you very kindly to Nancy in New York, one of the partial sponsors of the program. Thank you to Laborman in New Mexico. And thank you to Arthur. Thank you, Arthur, very kindly there in Arizona, Stan. Those are our subscribers for the 17th day of the month. Thank you very kindly, one and all. That's very important. We knocked down about a quarter of our funding needs for any given month, thanks to our subscribers. So thank you. Thank you very kindly to Arthur and Nancy and our buddy Laborman. Thank you so very much indeed. And if you'd like to become a subscriber, gosh, we'd love for you to. I did some figuring. I think it works out to about an eighth of a cup of coffee for every program here. An eighth of a latte or a mocha latte, half-calf cappuccino with extra soy vegan foam kind of thing. Yeah, about an eighth of it. Yeah, so that's, you know. That's about two good swallows on a cup of coffee there, you know, a venti. Yes. That's what you're giving up if you should happen to subscribe. If you'd like to subscribe, run on over to headon.live, click on the PayPal button. There's a little check mark box there. Check that box, put in 10 bucks, and gosh, that'll be you know, that eighth of a cup of coffee or less than half of a McDonald's hamburger or less than half of a Taco Bell taco to support this independent, not profit-driven, independent broadcast operation. And one of these days, you know, we get 400 and I quit talking. We get 400 $10 a month subscribers and I quit talking about fundraising. But as it is, I have to, because we left a challenge on the table last night for Moran Monday. Thank you very kindly to Gary and Gaia for making the challenge. I'm so sorry that it was not met, but thank you very kindly to Charlene for jumping in and trying to. It just wasn't, and so the evening's fundraising goal is now $545. That's, well, we could round down the five and make that 54 brand new subscribers at $10 a month, or you know, however that shakes out. But $545. That's where the fundraising goal stands. And a reminder, the Horn got invited to Radio Row down at Netroots Nation, and it would be nice to go there and accept the invitation. I have a feeling there are a lot of good conversations to be had and a good opportunity to invite more people into our little community. But we can't do it if we can't make the fundraising goal. And there's also, remember, the Beat the Swede 2018 challenge on the table. And we have had, that's our buddy Scott in Sweden, who put forward $1,000. $1,000 challenge. If others of the community will help meet it. And so far, $465 of that has been met, thanks to Chris in Germany, and thanks to Charlene, and thanks to our buddy Glenn in New York. If we can finish up fundraising on schedule and meet the Beat the Swede Challenge 2018, the Horn can be there on Radio Row at Netroots Nation at the beginning of August. So that's what's on the line here. So that's enough housekeeping for the people who in the podcast zip past all of this. That's enough. It's Titanic Tuesday. And we've got a fighting chance of getting back to our usual cataloging of the weird, the ignorant, the bizarre, you know, all those things that are manifested in the Titanic intellect of the right-wing mind. Mm-hmm. Because there's a bunch of it. And, well, yesterday being Moran Monday, we took a bit of a beating because of the treason summit and just the general visceral shock of watching an American alleged president betray his country live in real time. Because that's what we saw. And the fallout continues. With the White House now saying, well, and Trump in particular, no, I believe our intelligence community is, I think lots of people hacked us. Oh, for pity's sakes. Let it go. Don't let it go. But we've got to have some coping skills. But before we do go on to the ordinary workaday of Moran Monday, there are some things worth taking note of. For instance, Maria Butina Maria Butina, the Russian, the alleged Russian spy, and good friend of the National Rifle Association, or the National Ruble Association, as the case may be. She, as our buddy Joy pointed out, is she's when where Republicans are concerned, she's damn near Zelig. She's a cross between Zelig and, you know, Forrest Gump. She shows up. If you're a Republican, there's probably a picture of you and Maria Butina. She did good work. I mean, she did yeoman-like, workman-like. She got the job done as far as infiltrating the right wing in America is concerned. And testing the taste for treason that various and sundry members of the Republican Party would have. For instance, why, look. There's a photograph of Maria Butina standing right next to Wayne the Peter of the National Ruble, Ruble Association. And he's just standing there in the photograph, grinning like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush. You know it. There are lots of pictures. Why, there she is, before she... well, I don't know. She has her hair up in a bunch. That's when she's got long, 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 long red hair. And lo and behold, she's standing there with none other than wholly owned subsidiary of Koch Industries, Scott Walker. Hey, Scott, what are you doing standing there with that Russian spy, Scott? Oh, she just had a lot of things in common with the Republican Party, so, yeah. Oh, by Jove! There she is in a lovely little cocktail dress, standing with none other than noted fetus fetishist Rick Sanctum Santorum. Yes, Bro Fro Mix himself, standing there with a Russian spy. Oh, and look, there she is standing with once upon a time thought to be rising star of the Republican Party, fan of. A fan of Bobby Brady, Piyush Bobby Jindal. There's the Russian spy hanging out with Bobby. I'll be dipped. Mm-hmm. And why, look, there she is in a group photograph, just cute as a button, in front of signs saying, "Welcome to Russia," with noted... tough on crime, favorite black person of white people, white maggots everywhere, David Clarkey, you know, the guy who let a human being die of thirst in his jail in Milwaukee. Oh, she got around. I mean, I'm not saying she's a Mata Hari or anything, but holy mackerel. And those are just the ones we have pictures of. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah. So there's probably a lot of people out there scrubbing a lot of websites. That redheaded kid. We got pictures of that redheaded kid? Yeah, I know. I just got another photo from Flavio from the same trip, different pose. Welcome to Russia, comrades. Why, it's Sheriff Clarkey. And it really says that on the sign. Welcome to Russia, comrade. With the logo of... who? Why, of course... the National Ruble Association. Ruble Association. My goodness gracious, they do. The Republican Party certainly does have a taste for borscht. Mm-hmm. How about that? Yeah. Kind of odd, though, when Julius Geezer got back home to... got back home to, well, I mean, home is New York, in a tacky-ass penthouse in a building that apparently from time to time has housed God only knows how many different skeeves and skulldugs and sleazebags. And, well, one of them still lives there. Well, part-time, he has to live in the White House. He calls the White House the dump, you recall. Mm-hmm. It's not big and fancy like that there palace in St. Petersburg in Russia or that big brick edifice there in Moscow. Mm-mm. It's a dump. What a dump. Mm-hmm. But he got back home, and there's still an attempt to maintain something resembling normalcy. So they put out a presidential schedule at the White House, saying what the president's going to be doing that day, and for purposes of arranging coverage. Well, initially, the president's schedule for today, Tuesday, the 17th day of July, read: President receives his intelligence briefing. President has lunch with the vice president. That's this morning, earlier. Well, all of a sudden it changed. And everything that would have happened in the morning just disappeared. And the first thing on the schedule was all of the new revised and updated schedule was 2 p.m. President meets with members of Congress. The intelligence briefing, gone. Lunch with the vice president, gone. Do you wonder if maybe they were trying to get his meds re-regulated after the long trip? Or was he just sitting around in boxer shorts and a bathrobe with a bag of Cheetos watching Fox and Friends? Because even if that was going to be a problem if he was watching Fox and Friends. But here's another little interesting tidbit. Today, this morning, when the stable genius wasn't doing anything and had his schedule scrubbed, had the meeting with his intelligence heads, the daily intelligence briefing scrubbed. Well, lo and behold, Hans Nichols of NBC News spotted Rod Rosenstein leaving the White House at 11:28 a.m., that part of the schedule where Donald Trump didn't have anything on his schedule anymore. I mean, granted, to be fair, if I had just committed treason live in real time in front of the entire world, and if I had just thrown my entire intelligence community under the bus, maybe I wouldn't want to meet with them for my presidential daily briefing either, because maybe the presidential briefing had only three words on it. Maybe four. You're a fucking traitor! Okay, how about seven? How about seven words? You're a fucking traitor! You committed treason! That'd be a hell of an intelligence briefing to have to come home to, wouldn't it? But lo and behold, there was Rod Rosenstein the very day after after the intelligence community got shat on. The very day after he sold us out, Trump did in Helsinki, and the very day after the indictment of, Maria Butina Gump, Rod Rosenstein shows up at the White House. Now, Hans Nichols there at NBC News did say it was unclear if he met with President Trump. Rosenstein, who's still in the residence and hasn't shown up in the West Wing this morning. Maybe he was shaken. Maybe he found out that there was more than one home movie. Maybe he was dealing with whatever it is he's been told to do now. It's not about the buyout. It's not even about the pee-pee tape. Or tapes. The recordings. It's about what's expected in return for not releasing it. That's generally the nature of blackmail. Now, when the story got out that Rosenstein was seen leaving the White House, the White House staff went lickety-split and said, no, this is just an ordinary meeting. Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein goes and has a meeting at the White House every time the president comes back from a foreign trip the next day, and he goes to the White House, you know, at every time the president commits treason in real time on worldwide live video. It's just an ordinary trip to the White House, just another day at work for Deputy AG Rod Rosenstein. You buy it? Rosenstein attends one of these meetings every week. Yeah, definitely every week. Although, curiously enough, that meeting certainly wasn't on the president's schedule. So I guess we're left to perhaps consider the possibility that Rod wasn't meeting with Comrade Kumquat. That maybe he was meeting with National Security Advisor John Pornstash Bolton, now starring in commercials for an insurance company. Little guy with a white bushy mustache talking to Shaquille O'Neal. Right. Don't know. Just don't know. That's true. Jeff from Hellhole, Indiana, with a note says, Bob, they could just use the same intel briefing every morning. Donnie, you're a dumbass! Or, you know, modern media being what it is, they could put it on a tablet and just play John Goodman from The Big Lebowski saying, shut the fuck up, Donnie. Let's see. Meanwhile, note coming from Randy, who pays attention to these sorts of things. I suspect that the U.S. has a cyber vulnerability and that Trump has sidled up to those nations that pose a threat, such as Russia and North Korea, in order to buy time whilst the U.S. bolsters its cyber defenses. Why? Because Lionel, a noted liberal, has become a flaming Trump supporter, and I can figure no other reason why he would have done so. Hey, he's not the only one. And I can give you another reason. Money. There's good money in being a maggot. Especially being a maggot who was a former liberal, or a liberal who's a maggot. It creates a sort of marketing space around itself. Trump lives in another country, my ass, Bob, says Scott. Not unlike Superman, he's from a distant planet, a visitor from a strange planet, in fact. We used to call those Sefafels, a strange agent from a foreign land. Of course, this presents a few limitations for Trump, Scott says. He's not bothered by kryptonite at all. But he can't leap over a pile of his own bullshit in a single bound. He can shovel it, but navigating it is something else entirely, as Bob Mueller is finding out. Oh, I'd say there's more right than wrong in that statement, Scott. Jim, meanwhile, notes merely, Putin has made Trump his bitch. But when you do something like that, you want something. What's the get going forward? There's the challenge. That's the inquiry. Maybe we'll find out that with the next the next time a newsroom full of journalists is blown away. Maybe he'll get a bouquet of roses from Putin for that. And you know, just as he claimed that the recording of him trashing Theresa May didn't exist, even though, you know, it was there for all kinds of people to hear him trash Theresa May and suggest that Boris Johnson and his odd haircut would make for a great prime minister for the UK, and that he told her how to solve Brexit, but that she didn't want to do it. I'm so much smarter. I knew exactly what to do. Well, today, Trump said that he accidentally misspoke. Or more particularly, that the reporters misunderstood what he was saying. You, not just the reporters, you, me, the entire planet that was watching live as he sold our country down the river, we just didn't understand what he meant when he said that he believed Putin over his own intelligence agencies. But the maggots are still out there, and they're still defending him. One of them did a horrible job of it today on MSNBC. That would be your representing Thomas Massie of Kentucky Stan. Jumped right out there and tried to get his nose as far up the fundament of the as far up the orange fundament as he possibly could, so that you could see him, his smiling face, and when Geezer Disgustus yawns. Oh, yes. So all of that is in the background. I've been just kind of gobsmacked for a solid 24 hours now. I shouldn't be, but I have been. But we talked about that last night, yesterday evening, the last podcast, however you want to refer to it. We talked about that. It's the difference between knowing something has happened and seeing it happen. There is a substantial difference. So we're into the first half hour of the program. Thank you very kindly to Ralphs. Ralphs has a $30 challenge on the table. It would be nice to see this met. Ralphs says, in honor of tiny kittens, Consuela's three kittens, Tesla, Bentley, and Allie, I'm offering a $30 challenge. Consuela needed to have a C-section to deliver her kittens. Her fourth kitten had congenital defects and didn't make it. She was named Mercedes. Hugs. Thank you. Thank you, Ralphs. So the Consuela's $30 challenge is on the table, and that would go that would take a bite out of the $545 that we've got extant for fundraising at the moment. Yeah, so that'd take us down to $485 if it's met. So thank you, Ralphs, and hopefully this one will not go unanswered as Gary and Gaius did. I feel terrible about that. Scary Jerry says fundament. Cowbell now. It's fun when you guys give me a cowbell. That's a blast. Thank you. Thank you, Jerry. We've dealt with what we can deal with. The rest of it is sitting around waiting to find out what else Robert Mueller has. And he has something because he sought, and we don't know who it is. but he has sought immunity for five separate witnesses, immunity from prosecution for five separate witnesses in the case against Paul Manafort. Mm-hmm. In his immunity request to the court, made via motion practice, he is seeking to he's seeking to have the court compel the testimony via immunity at Manafort's upcoming trial. Because if they have immunity, then they can't plead the Fifth anymore. The Fifth Amendment preserving one's constitutional right against self-incrimination. If you're immune, you cannot incriminate yourself. Five people? Seems rather a lot. But we don't know who they are. And they have not been, the names have not been disclosed publicly because there's no guarantee that they will be, their testimony will be used at trial. Let's see, one more thing out of the treason summit. Wowzer. Tangerine Tiberius, had typewritten notes. This is real. When I first saw this, I checked it because it smacks of one of those moments where reality runs up against the onion and the onion loses. But it's real. I mean, it had deep digging on it. You know, when you've got typewritten, typed out, printed out notes in front of you, it is not at all unusual to underline things, put an asterisk, or a number like a footnote, jot down a little note in the margins. Do it all the time. So that shouldn't come as a surprise. But Donnie Dimwit gave himself away. Well, no, he gave his country away, but focus, Bob, focus. At one point, he held up his paper, and you could see where he had handwritten a note. He likes to write it. For want of one of those big, thick crayons like they give kindergartners, he likes to write in a big, thick Sharpie. And he had made one note on his prepared notes for the meeting. And because photography has advanced a lot, and you can blow stuff up a lot. The one note, because he had to remind himself, the one note that he made was two words. No collusion. No, really. The Spirochetes needed a reminder that there was no collusion. And just because we're really picky and we're grammar goons, we now know another thing. In addition to all the other words he can't spell, Holy Jesus, Donald Trump can't spell collusion. It's a well-known enough word. I mean, I'm familiar with it as a longtime practitioner of the art of word knowing. He uses it a lot. You would presume that maybe he's even seen it from time to time in his... No, because he doesn't read those. He just tears them up and throws them into the garbage, and then a member of his staff has to take them out of the garbage and glue them back together. He can't spell collusion. He tends to write in all caps. And in his big, broad-tipped Sharpie, he wrote in all caps, N-O-C-O-L-U-S-I-O-N. Like to buy an L, Vanna? Because he needed to remind himself to tell the world, you know, lie to the world about what he'd already done. It's not playing well, what he did in Helsinki. Social media was an absolute blizzard of comments on his stupidity. And now we wait. Yeah, what are we waiting for? Well, we're waiting for people like, well, I don't know, Jeff Flake. Jeff Flake says he's going to introduce a resolution in the Senate, by God, that will deal with what Trump said at Helsinki. It'll hold Russia to account, Flake says, for Congress, the Senate, not to reaffirm our support, and that to let people know that we don't question the intelligence. We're there. Speaking to reporters, Jeff Flake said, I think we should pass a resolution on the heels of all this. Harumph! Didn't get a harumph out of that guy. Harumph! Watch your ass. Asked about his response to seeing the betrayal of this country in real time. Jeff Flake said, it was disbelief, really, it was disbelief. I couldn't believe that a president would put as much faith or more faith in the words of a dictator over our own intelligence services. Yeah. Bob Corker, another member of the rubber-tipped Aero Brigade, said, we'll think of ways to reinforce. They know, I think, how Congress feels in general, but the president can do more damage in 15 minutes to that relationship than all of us working together for months can overcome. Important because Bob Corker and his quiver full of rubber-tipped arrows, which he fires over his shoulder while furiously riding away in constant full retreat, he's actually the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee. The same committee Jeff Merkley sits on from Oregon, who we heard from last night, in the last podcast, I should say, who said he thinks there is probably something very like the pee-pee tape in existence. Don't get your hopes up. It is, after all, Bob Corker and Jeff Flake we're talking about. Either of whom could audition for the role of the Dauphin in Henry V. Going on and on and on the night before Agincourt about his horse and what an excellent horse it is. And at one point in time, I forget, I think it's the Marshal of France who turns to another and says of the Dauphin, he never did harm that I heard of, and receives as a response, he will eat all that he does kill. Maybe it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that we put no store, no stock in what Jeff Flake or Bob Corker say. Maybe if we just had a little more faith in them, like Tinkerbell, they would be able to fly. Or maybe they have spines like Slinkies and just really can't stand up to a madman and a wannabe dictator. It's kind of your call on it. It's an opinion thing. Oh, and by the way, in attempting to somehow deflect criticism of his betrayal of this country, according to Bloomberg, Trump is all excited because he's going to have Air Force One repainted. Well, not repainted. It's the next version of Air Force One. It's going to be top of the line, top of the world. And it's going to be red, white, and blue, which I think is appropriate. And I do too. Wait a minute. Lose the voice. I think it's appropriate too because those are also the national colors of fucking Russia! I think theirs go white, blue, red, don't they, down the flag? Oh, going back to the Clementine Caligula's notes wherein he had marked, he also crossed out a line. Maybe it's more telling than reminding himself to say no collusion. Horst reminds us, don't forget, he also crossed out a line in those notes. The line said that anyone caught in connection to the election meddling should be brought to justice. You're definitely marking that out, because that would be me. Yeah. And now we're, top of the line. Air Force One is going to be top of the line. Since when has it not been? And Ben. I know. But like I said, we've got an opportunity this evening to get back to the business of spotting Titanic intellect. And there's a good bit of it. Like the Roswell Police Force in Georgia, where a pair of police officers are on administrative, otherwise known as paid vacation, having been caught on a body cam doing a coin toss, using a coin toss app. Jesus, they couldn't even toss the coin themselves. They got to have an app for it. Oh, there's an app for that. Deciding whether or not to arrest a woman that they pulled over for speeding. WXIA-TV broke the news. Courtney Brown and Christy Wilson are the police officers. They had pulled over Sarah Webb for doing in excess of 80 miles an hour. And it was their discretion whether to arrest her or not. I'm not kidding. They then use their app to do a digital coin flip. There were even sound effects. It landed on R, but they decided to arrest her anyway. Why not? Sarah Webb didn't know until WXIA-TV contacted her. She had no idea that her justice had been administered on a whim, summarily administered by a pair of police officers. She said, wow, these people put my freedom in the hands of a coin flip. That's disgusting. And then the prosecutor got a look at it and said, no, we're going to dismiss this. And then I'm going to run back to my office and I'm going to call our, I'm going to call risk management and make sure that, they know all about this. Because I'm pretty sure we're going to get sued. Jesus. It's just a taste of it. Just a taste. Meanwhile, we're back to Helsinki for just a minute here. Some stuff that didn't... Did you catch the clip? Thank you, James. That's absolutely right. James in Illinois. See, Bob, it's easy to misspeak. Yeah. No collusion. Yeah. Now, going back to yesterday, there was a little moment that made the entire white-winged nutosphere collectively have to go and change their shorts. All the weirdos and the incels and the... During the press conference, huggable, lovable, cuddly, snuggleable, would never hurt a fly... vicious dictator Vladimir Putin, who has journalists killed on a word, after the million-dollar question, or the PP question, as you may think of it, about whether he believed his intelligence agencies or he believed Putin, Putin chimed in. And he said, I will add something too. The Concorde company is being accused of interference, but this company does not institute the Russia state, does not represent Russia state. Russia state. Go Wolfhounds. They've got a long-time standing rivalry with the University of Russia. Never mind. Does not represent Russia state, and I brought several examples before. You have a lot of individuals in the United States. Take George Soros, for instance, with multi-billion capitals. But it doesn't make his position, his posture, the posture of United States. Holy shit! From the seedy back alleys of bright of that website that rhymes with light and fart, over to the fetid swamp that is InfoWars, as his followers swill chocolate chicken bone paleo beverage, to the disease-infested gateposts of the Gateway Pundit. The white-winged nutosphere went wild. Jack Prosobiec said, raise your hand if you agree it's time to investigate George Soros. Laura Loomer said, OMG, Putin just dropped George Soros' name while asking the international press if they truly believe the United States is a democracy. Wow, I'm seriously impressed by this chutzpah. This is huge. Holy crap, Russian President Putin just attacked George Soros. OMG, liberals are going to riot tonight. Kind of like the Second Civil War. Didn't happen. But George Soros is a conjuring word. And you can bet your ass that that old intel agent knew his audience when he made reference to George Soros. Four chan went wild. That website that rhymes with light and fart had a big splashy article that put George Soros's photograph in a yellow circle in between Putin and Geezer Disgustus. Russian President Vladimir Putin accused far-left billionaire George Soros of meddling in international affairs during a joint press conference Monday. Hey, George, buddy, how about you take a minute for meddling in international affairs and meddle in progressive broadcasting for a couple of minutes? Won't take you long. Just go over to headon.live, click on the PayPal button, type the number 1, and then just hold the 0 button down until your finger gets tired. Then click make this a recurring monthly, and then click again, and you know you're done. Probably do a lot more good. Then they could write articles about us over at that website that rhymes with light and fart. Mm-hmm. Dear God. I know. But we do have a $30 challenge on the table, courtesy of Ralph's. Consuela's challenge, in honor of her 3 new kittens. And, you know, 3 new subscribers would be awesome for the 17th of the month. Or just 3 people at $10. Or 6 people at 5. Anything to sort of get off the fundraising schneid here would be helpful. And I despise talking about it, but there you go. Note coming from Scott. Subject line, town hall meetings. I would imagine there's still enough summer left for House members and senators to go home for one or more town hall meetings with their constituents. Labor Day is also still to come, so there will be parades, picnics, or other gatherings. Oh yeah, the August recess is coming up. There's no better time to bring up the matters of Trump incompetence and or involvement in Russian meddling with our elections. 2016, certainly, and next up, 2018. If such an opportunity for input presents itself, show up and make some noise, folks. Not unlike when the GOP was killing off of the Affordable Care, or trying to, Affordable Care Act. To the extent that it helps anything, we've got to challenge them about their spinelessness as they silently sit by enabling this asshat. Can I put treasonous in front of asshat, Scott? Would you mind if I did that editorially? I bet you wouldn't. Thank you. But great Caesar's ghost. No, we've got a lot of stupid out there. Lauren Southern is one of those so-called white nationalist types. I guess, you know, the neo-Nazis adore her. She calls herself an activist. She's a neo-Nazi for all intents and purposes. And she showed up a week or so ago on the program that is hosted by our favorite right-wing broadcaster, unafraid to appear on air drunk out of his mind, or at least sounding so. That's right, she showed up, Lauren Southern did. Southern. It's got to be just the goddess of irony hard at work. Showed up with Jesse Lee Peterson to talk about, well, just get the hockey puck, okay? It's Titanic Tuesday, remember? Right.
I have always thought that Nelson Mandela was an evil man, and when they brought him here to our country, presented him as a good person, I'm saying, no, Nelson Mandela is head of the ANC. He's not a good man. Do you agree with me that Nelson Mandela was an evil man?
Well, the fact that he introduced his opposition with 57 public bombings and was part of the Communist Party, yeah. I don't think that's an opinion. I think it's an objective statement.
Yes.
If he had been white or even Asian or anything but black and during the time he was in, I think that there would be far more criticism. And certainly we can speak of his wife as well, the tactics, like necklacing they used against other blacks who simply wanted to work with the government at the time, setting them on fire with tires around their neck. It was evil. Of course these were evil atrocities. And
now this is just nasty so far, but we're going to go from nasty to mean and stupid pretty quick. So if you didn't take the hockey puck warning seriously, please get it.
And we're sold a false narrative by the media today of who these people were.
Whites are not allowed to work in peace there in Africa. And so as a result of that, the whole country is suffering now.
Time out. Whites are not allowed to work in peace there in Africa. So now the whole country. That's right. Africa is a country, not a continent. And this is going to come as quite a surprise to the Moroccans, the Egyptians, the Algerians, the Tanzanians, the Zimbabweans, the Kenyans, the Nigerians, the Ghanans. You get the idea. The country.
It seemed to me that people were better under apartheid than they are with what's happening now.
No, really, he did say that. He did. People in South Africa were better off under apartheid than they are now. Oh, if only to build that time machine and let Jesse Lee Peterson move to Pretoria or Cape Town or Sun City or right. Maybe Jesse Lee would like to go and work in the gold mines there in South Africa. Maybe we better just go back to talking about Trump.
That's something that, of course, I feel like I can't even give my opinion on.
That's a polite way for Lauren Southern to say, listen, I get called a Nazi all the fucking time. Don't make it worse for me, bub. Because even Lauren Southern knows how vicious and how hateful apartheid was. And she won't even go there.
I would say under apartheid, just because things were better under apartheid does not mean apartheid is good. What it means is that the government now is doing such a poor job and socialism is so bad that it's literally worse than apartheid. And that's what's crazy is that's
nervous laugh if ever I heard one. Oh, fuck, how do I get out of this? It's bad enough I can't go to most European countries. Now I'm not going to be able to leave. I'm never going to be. Oh, my God.
I had individuals come up to me of all races in South Africa and tell me the rand was higher under apartheid. We had less crime under apartheid because people were actually punished for murder and attack and assault.
And you know, some people were just punished for being alive. That'll cut your crime rate down a lot if you're punishing. Punishing, let's call it pre-crime, shall we?
So, yeah, there were a lot of aspects under apartheid that were better. That doesn't mean it's a good thing. That means the government now is so bad that it's literally worse than.
You know what got me too is that the whites that you talked to were afraid to tell the truth. They were afraid to even say what the truth is. And I'm thinking, that's what's happening in America right now, is that if white people don't start speaking up and fighting back and saying no, we could have the same situation in America, because whites are hated in America, unjustly hated in America. And if whites don't start speaking up and the people of color take over, we could have the same situation here in America.
What? People of color going to take over? Well, you know, we got very close with that that Kenyan Muslim usurper in the White House. Now that Maxine Waters is running around and talking about how she wants to impeach the greatest president we've ever had. Yeah. Yes, you did. Keith with a note says, subject line, Mandela. Did I hear that right, Bob? The sun was in my ears. Oh, wait a minute. That's one of your better, yes. Did I hear that right? The sun was in my ears. Did he say Mandela was an evil man? The hell does he consider a good man? P.W. Botha? What's his name, Leclerc? Donald Trump? United States Attorney General Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III? George Wallace? Lester Maddox? Keith says, if I'm wrong, please refresh my memory about the time. No, you're... But... Like I said, we're getting back to the business as usual of Titanic Tuesday. It's going to be a little jarring. Oh, yes. too late, Silent R. Bob. Uh-oh. You're going to get the lawyer letter, I'm telling you. Please no fucking Jesse Lee while I'm working. I just may break or hurt someone or thing. I'm still waiting for someone, hopefully a cop to beat the living poop out of him. Oh no, he's not going to do anything that would make that would cause that to happen. No. Meanwhile, a quick note from yeah, cowbell for this too. See, we didn't have any cowbell last night. But gotta have cowbell. Quick note coming in from Les. Fuck Uncle Ruckus. Kind of is, isn't he? Yeah, of course, I'm sure that various and sundry birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, birchers, booger eaters, maggots, trumpansies, libertarians, have never heard of Uncle Ruckus, so that's completely lost on them. Good. James in Illinois says, Jesse Lee sounds just like someone's literally leading this guy around by his nose. It's oral, and it has to do with a swirly straw and apparently a bottle maker's mark. Meanwhile, Alexander says, Brother Kincaid, please forgive me. I'm not saying this about all white people. No, I know. Not all white people. I'll simply say that these two individuals, erroneously and ignorantly speaking on the Mandelas, who are not here to defend themselves because they're busy being dead, and the inhumane conditions on the continent of Africa exemplify just how innately stupid all too many white folks are. Alexander? Jesse Lee is not white folks. I think he'd like to be, but he's not. Yeah. I'm absolutely up to my eyeballs in this madness. We've got lots of it. Let's go to San Francisco. I bet you our buddy Matt has already heard this little piece of audio. So a dude goes into the Verizon store, wants a new phone. Yeah, wait a minute, Ron and Raleigh, what do you think? You think old Jesse Lee has a little coke money in his account? Nelson Mandela was imprisoned in Robben Island for 23 years. It was okay for the government to murder and imprison at will, but if you fight back, you're an evil man. I don't have words. He may have something better than coke money. He's got religion industry money. Because remember, first and foremost, Jesse Lee Peterson is a reverend, a minister, a preacher of the gospel, a servant of the Prince of Peace. And that, well, as the prophet Bill Hicks once said, peace be upon him, that's big dollar. That's what that is. But back to San Francisco. Because sometimes, I mean, it's not good to have these stories at all, but sometimes it's, I guess it's kind of a good thing that we have these stories and they're not all coming out of Birmingham or Macon, Georgia or Memphis or Bucksnort, Tennessee or wherever. This comes out of San Francisco. Dude wanted a new cell phone. He had a family plan. But he didn't know the PIN, the personal identification number for his family plan. So he showed up at the Verizon store to buy a phone, and because he didn't have the PIN, he couldn't get the phone. And he didn't have enough money to just buy the phone straight up. The sales rep at the Verizon place was a black guy. This is a white guy. Big sun hat, great big fuzzy beard, long hair. And got all upset because he couldn't afford the phone. This, of course, necessitated a vituperative outburst against the black guy who had tried to, you know, help him.
The who?
Nigga will take my money.
Nigga
will hit me.
I'm a nigga. Keep on, nigga. You're a fucking scream. I'm a nigger. Keep calling me a nigger.
Nigger. You kick me, motherfucker. I got fucking witnesses. You being a dumbass.
That's fine. Nobody's going to testify against you, a dumbass.
Your ass is fire.
You stupid. I'm fire?
Fire, nigger.
That's what you wanted this whole time, huh?
I'm fire, nigger.
That's fine. You want me to react?
That's fine.
I'm going to react. Fuck you.
Salt and battery, motherfucker.
That's fine.
White supremacy.
Okay, bye.
White supremacy.
We don't deal with fucking bigots like you.
You
fuck you. Nobody fucking cares about you. Right. Fuck you, dude.
I walked in there,
it's not even fucking worth it. Fuck this piece of shit, you racist ass motherfucker. Fuck your racist ass. That's fine. I can be an ignorant nigger all I want.
Yeah, you
will. That's fine. That's fine. That's fine. Look how ignorant you fucking sound. Look how fucking ignorant you sound. I can come over there and I can knock you in your fucking face, but I'm not. You know why? The fuck are you sitting here talking shit for?
Why do you care that?
Okay, so shut the fuck up then, bro. Shut the fuck up, man.
Racist ass people, bro. In San Francisco.
I know.
He's a nigger, and he's disrespectful the entire black race.
You're a fat
How about that?
How about that?
Okay,
then. That's always a favorite of mine. He's disgracing the black race, says the white guy screaming a vicious, hate-filled racial epithet. Mm-hmm. That's special. And I always ask my question myself the question, does this need to be aired? I don't want to be perceived as offering something up simply for the shock value of it or the prurient value of it. But the problem is, on the 17th day of July 2018, in the United States of America, clips like this no longer have shock value. Because they're just something that happens in America on days that end in Y. It was bad enough when white people lost their tiny minds, some of them, not all white people, but some white people lost their tiny minds with the election of Barack Obama, and that sort of opened a door. But then, on November 8th, 2016, they felt vindicated, and based upon the behavior of the person they had voted for president, they felt like it was okay to come out in the open with their words and their hatred. And so it isn't shocking anymore. But again, if this appears in the for-profit media, on a network or something, it would be bleeped. As if no one out there knew what word was being spoken. But even the bleeping provides some cover for this racist ass. And then he falls back on the tired old bullshit of, you know, there are black people, which is one of the most annoying, Jesus. But hey, it's Tuesday. And in America, on Tuesday, or Wednesday, or Sunday. Yeah, well. And then there's a story that doesn't come with bleeping. It was a year ago that Officer Charles DeShazer was overheard on another officer's dash cam making reference to a group of black folks. This was out in Aurora, Colorado. Officer DeShazer said, "We got the Alabama porch monkeys all contained." Now, this almost feels like maybe it started out as a story, something going right. The department found that out, and on June the 8th of 2017, he wasn't just an officer, he wasn't just a patrolman. He was a lieutenant in the Aurora Police Department, Charles DeShazer. That's when it happened, June 18th, 2017. And an internal affairs investigation was immediately initiated. Following the investigation, Police Chief Nick Metz. Following the investigation, I terminated Lieutenant DeShazer on September 1st, 2017. That's how it should have gone. That's how it should have ended. But racist police lieutenant Charles DeShazer decided that being fired for being a racist cop violated his rights. So he appealed to the Colorado Civil Service Commission. Guess what? The Colorado Civil Service Commission reinstated him, and he has been rehired by the city of Aurora, Colorado. These were people gathered, the people he referred to in the initial recording, these were people who were gathered around after a shooting. An officer involved shooting. I'm sorry, it wasn't the Colorado Civil Service Commission. It was the Aurora, Colorado Civil Service Commission. And the Civil Service Commissioner said, well, Lieutenant DeShazer certainly needs substantial discipline. So we're going to demote him from lieutenant to sergeant. He's not going to get the 10 months back pay from when he was fired. Really? You're not going to get back pay for when you were fired for being a racist. Chief Metz said, I respect the commission's decision, but that doesn't mean I have to agree with it. Chief Metz continued, I felt the termination was the correct course of action. I felt that it would send a strong message internally and externally about what our expectations are in this agency, and we have set a high bar. He said his other officers are absolutely appalled by what then-Lieutenant DeShazer said, and they're not at all happy that he was rehired. He's going to have to go back through the academy before he gets his new assignment, but you got to wonder about the commissioners, don't you? Jesus, that's sickening. It's also America. But we know that, don't we? And, by the way, I have good news here in the second hour of the program. Thank you to John in North Carolina, Stan, who just met Ralph's challenge. Thank you, John. Thank you so very much. Kicking in my tithe to the Church of Bob. Oh, dear, I don't think I want to be a religious avatar, John. No, thank you so very much. That's hugely important. So fundraising just went down to 485. If some folks can come in alongside John in North Carolina, Stan, we could get out of this hole a little bit, and that would be wonderful. Note coming from Marty. The Verizon worker would have strengthened his case had he kept the profanity out of his reply. One must always keep their cool, even in the face of monumental stupidity. I know. But sometimes we ask a lot of people who are dealing with a lot of stupidity. And some folks just can't. How much would any of us it's not easy to keep that stuff tamped down all that, because you know this guy didn't just say it and walk away. He hammered on it a while. You see what I mean? But it's Merca. Let's run down to Memphis, Tennessee, shall we? Where there's a medical practice run by the good Dr. James Turner. Lexi Carter had a medical appointment with Dr. Turner on July the 11th. She showed up for her... She showed up for her appointment, and Dr. Turner walked into the examining room and said, "Hi, Aunt Jemima." No, really. "Hi, Aunt Jemima." She said, "I haven't slept. I haven't really been able to deal with this, Miss Carter. It's just the most horrible feeling, really, and I try to understand it, and I don't understand it." Well, here, let me help folks understand it. He called her Aunt Jemima because it's deemed improper to just use the word the guy in San Francisco was using. Ms. Carter said it was an insult, racial, ethnic insult, a joke. "It's putting me on a level of someone who is subservient with a smile, kind of a step and fetch it. It was very derogatory, very demeaning, especially for someone who prides myself in being none of that." Having issued a statement, Dr. Turner issued a statement, of course, saying, "Ms. Carter is one of our very dear patients and has been for years. She's one of many African-American patients, and I count it a privilege to be their doctor. Anything I said that tarnishes that image in my respect for her was a misspoken blunder." Now, where have we heard about misspeaking today from a racist? Oh, wait, he's president of the United States. Never mind. "It was a misspoken blunder on my part and was not intended to show disrespect for Ms. Carter. I'm very sorry for that misunderstanding." Well, now. It's a misunderstanding. See, that's the problem. Ms. Lexi Carter just didn't properly understand what the good doctor, Dr. James Turner, was getting at by referring to her as Aunt Jemima. "Well, good morning, Aunt Jemima." I mean, he greets white ladies that way, and black ladies, and Asian ladies, and sure. Because it's relevant to all of them. Maybe for the white ladies, he says, "Good morning, Alice, the maid from the Brady Bunch." No, I don't think so. Yeah, Dr. Turner is trying to forestall the formal complaint that Ms. Carter is going to file with the Tennessee Board of Medical Examiners. Want to make this just a little bit worse, shall we, this Titanic Tuesday? Dr. Turner's a dermatologist. Yeah, that's right, he's a skin doctor. His specialty is paying attention to people's skin. Morning, Aunt Jemima! Hi, y'all! And by the way, Jemima ain't nobody's aunt except to the children of, you know, her siblings and perhaps her spouse's siblings. But aunt, well, just like uncle, was a term of endearment used for older slaves down on the plantation. Meanwhile, note coming in from Michael in Madison. Subject line, Chris Rock routine. Did I hear that right? Some cracker tried to do the old Chris Rock routine. There was literally an entire episode of The fucking Office dedicated to explaining why it wasn't okay for Michael Scott to do that routine. It was the second episode of the entire fucking nine-season run. The first episode after the pilot. It aired over 13 years ago. White people never learn, do they? Well, some of us did. Not all white people, Michael. Now, come on. But no. 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 Not okay. And some don't. Well, it's not that they don't learn. They're not interested in learning. They feel put upon. Because they can't just run around shrieking it at the top of their lungs. Here then. Let's go. John from North Carolina, Stan, just answered Ralph's Consuela's Three Kittens challenge. And it just so happens that I got a North Carolina story handy. And it comes out of Charlotte, North Carolina. It's the story of a family who put a sign in their yard. The sign said, "Fuck Trump." To which I always respond, "Not even with yours." But they put a "Fuck Trump" sign in their yard. This then angered a white guy in a pickup truck who claimed that he was upset because his precious chirrens might see the word "fuck." Now, since I suspect he is a maggot, I don't think we have to worry about his children reading anything. Yeah? There's only one thing, one problem. He'll give away his concern. Will sort of obviate itself by virtue of his own conduct. So white dude pulls his truck up on the street and goes to the home of the people with the sign. Goes up onto their property. Right up their sidewalk, right up to their front stoop. You know, in some parts of America, that'd get you killed right dead. Or at least it has several people of dark skin complexion. And here's what happened.
Get the fuck off my property right now. Why you care about fuck? You only care about fuck
my
Trump.
Kids.
Let's go.
It said if it Hillary Clinton, I wouldn't give a fuck, dude. If it said Bernie Sanders, I voted for Bernie Sanders, motherfucker. I don't give a fuck. Fuck you. I drive by and it smells like goddamn weed in your fucking
house.
Who
cares?
Time out. This guy's worried about his children reading the word when it's pretty apparent that even if he has children, he uses it pretty with a fair degree of expertise. Oh, but by the way, there's also a Black Lives Matter sign in the yard. Oops. And then he tries to hide behind, "I voted for Bernie Sanders." You know what? He may have. That does not make him any less an, you know, asshole. I mean, that word works, right? Or
you dick.
Yeah, that too.
That's why the cops are coming right now, motherfucker.
Who gives a fuck?
I'm gonna get you, nigga, fuck.
You hear that? You see that shit? You see that? Get this fucking license plate.
He runs away through the yard and then we find out the real motivation. Shall we go back?
Fuck you. I drive by and it smells like goddamn weed in your fucking
house.
Who
cares?
That's why the cops are coming right now, motherfucker.
Who gives a fuck?
I'm gonna get you, nigga, fuck.
You hear that? You see that shit? You see that? Get this fucking license plate. I'm gonna find this motherfucking cracker.
Do it.
find this motherfucker.
Yeah, they got another sign that in their yard says, refugees welcome here. I mean, it's a perfect trifecta. Fuck Trump, refugees welcome here, Black Lives Matter. That, you know, that's just the little maggot snowflake triggers. He couldn't help it. He had to pull his car over. He was so triggered he couldn't stand himself. And the word was just waiting down in his bowels to burble up. And your house smells like weed. Huh? I'm going to call the cops. Oh, really? The cops going to go and get a search warrant based on the word of a guy? Oh, wait, it's in North Carolina. They might. Steve in New York says he no more voted for Sanders than I voted for Trump. I'd like to hope that that's true. I don't mean about you, Steve, but as we've experienced over the last year and a half or so, people.
You don't know who I am or who I'm.
I don't give a fuck, you little po-po piece of shit.
Get it. It's right here, bro. Get it.
Get it.
We're gonna
see. No, you go in. No, I got this.
Come get it.
I got this. I'm done.
Come get it. Come out in this fucking road. Come get my goddamn license tag, motherfucker.
I'm diva.
Oh, you a bad man. You ain't shit. Get it.
I got it.
Cracker.
I got it.
Cracker.
Don't get on our property no more.
Cracker. Okay. I'm a cracker.
North Carolina.
Yeah, after you said all you said right now.
North Carolina, FCT 6481, just in case anybody's wondering. Must not be his truck.
I'm a cracker.
After you said all you said right now,
I built
you need
this
to
country.
Leave. You built this.
And y'all's house smells like fucking all right. weed.
All right.
You know what?
That's
how do you know what weed smells
here?
Like, bub?
Get the fuck away.
Oh, because you mad? Because you're growing fucking pot in your house, bro? You better start clearing it out, motherfucker.
Wow, the nerve.
The nerves.
This is what we have here.
You gotta fuck
this
you, Donald Trump, son, when you got neighbors walking by here with kids.
Yeah. Who sent you?
And you're gonna
Who
put
sent
that.
You?
I
Bye.
Live right down here.
Bye.
I own two houses in this neighborhood.
Bye.
What y'all
we
own?
Good.
You don't even
we
own this house.
Really?
You don't own shit.
I know. I don't own shit.
Exactly.
I
never will,
shit.
Bro. You never will.
That's right, because I'm a. Why? Tell me why I don't own something. Because
you put a sign in your yard like that.
That's right.
You put a sign
wow.
in your yard like that.
Wow.
Oh!
So you came and banged.
Now, I'm gonna add one more little thing to this whole exchange. The guy that signpost Sammy screamed that word at. Asian dude. Plain and simple. We don't see his significant other. She might be African American, but see in maggot world, anybody not white, you understand? Anybody not white is fair game. North Carolina, isn't that where the next GOP national convention will be happening? Charlotte, in fact. Maybe he's part of the Trump advance team. Who knows? This was 2 days ago in Charlotte. Jesus. Then there's Illinois, Chicago area. A manager at CVS A woman was trying to use a coupon there. He thought it was a forged or a faked coupon. The manager did. Dollar off, quarter off, 10 cents off, 50 cents off. Who cares? Every coupon, even the real ones, say no cash value or cash value 0.0001 cent. Yeah. But he was all worried. About, you know, a woman using a fraudulent coupon. Yeah. Well, it turns out the manager is a guy by the name of Maury Matson. And Maury Matson has been trying really hard to get the Illinois Log Cabin Republicans restarted. The Illinois Log Cabin Republicans went all to pieces over Donald Trump. But Maury, well, Maury's a confirmed maggot. And he's going to put the Log Cabin Republicans back together. Or maybe not now. Because, see, when he got to being worried about the fraudulent coupon, he called 911. Now, suffice to say, the woman who had a real coupon, not a fraudulent one, but a real one, well, she was black. Mm-hmm. And so he dropped the dime on her. And the cops showed up. He talked to the police about her. And the cops didn't think anything of it. They didn't. Hey, it's a good thing. They didn't kill the woman in cold blood for illegal coupon. It could happen in America. But with a little digging around, it turned out that Maury Matson himself, log cabin Republican that he is, he got busted for forging petition signatures over a resolution to make a bike path near his home. He wanted the seawall at the beach declared a historic landmark. And then he went neighbor to neighbor to try to convince his neighbors that by improving the beachfront, it wouldn't mean that there was an influx of, quote, people from the south side, unquote. You know what that means. And so when he turned in his petition signatures for the ballot measure, turned out that 5 of the 13 pages of the signatures were all just written by old Maury. And he gave the CVS where he worked as their address. And it turned out that there was, according to the Chicago Board of Elections, there was a pattern of fraud, false swearing, and total disregard of the requirements of the election code, and they got rid of his bike path measure. But I guess that makes him an expert. Don't you? Merca. Hell yeah. That's just something, isn't it? Steve in New York notes, the one word that describes all flavors of Trumpanzee is coward. And as far as the fake coupon is concerned, don't these MFers, no, we can say it's the internet, don't these motherfuckers have anything better to do? Well, I mean, he is working on reconstituting the log cabin Republicans there, Steve, but you got to figure that's a pretty small group at this point, especially in maybe a place like Chicago. Jesus. Like I told you, we're kind of back to business as usual for Titanic Tuesday. Oh, yeah. And by the way, Twitter got around to suspending two of the accounts that are linked to the 12 Russians that Mueller indicted. Good for you, Jack. Yeah. How about that? We've got all this, and somehow we managed to. But then again, it is kind of about Trump in a way, isn't it? Because so much of this seems simply a natural outgrowth of what he. What he unleashed with not just his election or non-election, but with his candidacy. The stupid ye have always with ye, to paraphrase Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi. You'd always have some of this. And maybe you'd have what I've got coming up next, which probably should be saved for prayer meeting Wednesday. But my God, we're still going to have plenty by that time. By tomorrow, there'll be more. Yes, absolutely. We were introduced recently to Rodney Howard Brown. Another one of those guys who comes from somewhere else, you know, an immigrant who wanted to make it big in the religion industry because, you know, when you want to make it big in the religion industry, you go to America. And so here we have that particular species, the Christian climate change denialist. Hockey puck warning is in effect. Cat 5. Okay? Rodney Howard Brown delivering his sermon at something called the River at Tampa Bay Church. Okay?
The reason why we having the volcanoes and the earthquakes is because what is called a grand solar minimum, which is really a mini ice age. That's all I'm going to say about this right now. Most people talk about global warming, have no clue what they're talking about. That's all total fabrication and garbage. The earth is actually not heating, it's actually cooling. Sorry to tell you. Because everything functions off of the activity of the sun.
And Rodney Howard Brown, hyphens, you know, he would know because he's not a scientist and he doesn't play one on Sundays. That's what all these credulous individuals showed up on Sunday for. Oh, they didn't show up for a sermon about. Suffer the little children to come unto me, for theirs is the kingdom of God. No, they didn't show up for a sermon on if you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it also unto me. They came for a sermon about a little ice age. Because that's right there in the Bible.
And right now, the sun's activity is at a minimum, and that's why they call it a grand solar minimum. The solar winds are coming into the earth. They are magnetic, and they react with the core of the earth. They come in at about a million, million two, million five, and up to 2 million miles an hour. And that's what's causing the volcanoes and the earthquakes. That's called we are in a time of what's called a grand solar minimum, which is a mini ice age. And you can go and look at the history of the planet, and you'll see that the planet's always heated and cooled.
I feel like my brains are leaking out my ears. How about you?
Always. It's like a living thing. It's always heated and cooled. At the time of excessive cooling, people migrate. They migrate. They live in different places.
As long as it's not the United States, right, Rodney? I mean, you got in. Slam the door behind you, right, pal? Sure.
So somebody said, well, why do they keep pushing the narrative of global warming? Because it's about carbon tax and it's about global governance, which is a $1.5 trillion a year tax to the banking cabal.
Oh, banking cabal. Remember the other night we talked about the sly way that mostly the white wing is sneaking anti-Semitic fascist talking points into the conversation about the way that they're sort of clearing the brush out of the path toward genocide again. $1.5 trillion tax to the banking cabal. A cabal. How about that? I wonder who'd be running a cabal. Learned Elders of Zion, maybe? But it gets worse.
And that's what that's all about. Somebody said, well, the ice caps are melting. I've got news for you. The ice caps are not melting. The ice caps, in actual fact, the Arctic ice is at an all-time high right now. You say, why do you say that? Because I have Eskimo friends.
No, you don't. Although, have we ever given a cowbell to one of these hustlers? Because I'm tempted. Very small cowbell. Because I think in many years of broadcasting, this is the first time that I've ever heard some of my best friends are Eskimos used as a justification for a racial slur. Because if you had friends who were Eskimos, you wouldn't be calling them Eskimos. You'd be calling them Inuit, or you'd be calling them Aleut. Or you'd be calling them First Nations members. Canada. And see, he can just sit there and tell the rubes there gathered from Tampa that everything they're lying, everything their ears hear and their eyes see is a lie, and that only he holds the keys not just to the truth, but to the kingdom. Because, see, that's what makes the racket so effective. Once you fall under the sway of one of these maniacs, you have to believe every word he says if you want to be able to eat your pie in the sky when you die. My Eskimo friends. You know, I remember Mark Twain reading a short story by Mark Twain called The Eskimo Maiden's Romance. I think he spelled it E-S-Q-I-M-A-U-X. it is my understanding that it is an outmoded term that carries some of the same colonialist freight as maybe one of the other terms that we heard used earlier in the program in, say, San Francisco or North Carolina. But never mind that. Tell us about your Eskimo friends, Rodney Howard Brown.
The ice caps are not melting. The ice caps, in actual fact, the Arctic ice is at an all-time high right now. You say, why do you say that? Because I have Eskimo friends. I talk to my Eskimo friends probably three times a week. Somebody said the polar bears are dying. They are not dying. There are more polar bears. They don't even know what to do with the polar bears. He texts me and said, I'm looking at a polar bear through my window right now.
Why is it down there at your window right now? Because its hunting grounds have disappeared. And it is being driven by climate change and climate pressures to go where it otherwise wouldn't. Windows. Igloos with windows. You know, over the years, I'm proud of myself. I've learned over the years to control some of my baser impulses. A few years back, I would have been screaming and carrying on. Now I just tap into a little reservoir. Are you fucking kidding me? He talks to his Eskimo friends three times a week. Jesus jumping Christ. Eating an Eskimo pie. And how many people are sitting in that megachurch going, yeah, I know, he's got a... I wish I had Eskimo friends, too, to tell me ain't no such thing as climate change. Got more polar bears than we know what to do with. And I'm really no good at that. I'm no good at a lot of accents, but I'm really no good at that one. That's it. We determined that one evening. It's either Zimbabwean or South African or something. Yeah.
Polar bears are dying. They are not dying. There are more polar bears. They don't even know what to do with the polar bears. He texts me and said, I'm looking at a polar bear through my window right now. Yeah, but we...
Yeah, extinction's so goddamn funny. And yet they believe the God... They believe in a God that they think created that polar bear, and human beings are going to wipe it out, and God's going to be okay with that. Well, I did give you dominion over it. I didn't mean to fuck it up, but well, that's on me.
I saw a picture of a starving polar bear. He's an old bear that cannot hunt anymore, and National Geographic was there to take a picture. When you can't hunt anymore, you get skinny, and you get old, and you die.
Really? Not being able to hunt is the cause of getting old? I would have thought being able to hunt would have... Oh, Jesus. Yeah, thanks. You know, I stand in mute, awestruck amazement at our friends at Right Wing Watch. I've said it before, I'll say it again. I don't know... I don't know how whoever pulls these clips does it. Maybe at Right Wing Watch headquarters they've got a little their very own chapter of AA, where people just, you know, work with their serenity and their sobriety and somehow manage to, and every now and then they've just got the sponsors on speed dial and they push the button. I'm cutting clips of Rodney Howard Brown here. It's okay, buddy. It's okay. One day at a time. I'm not making fun. I couldn't do what they do. That's the only way you could do this stuff is just approaching it. That, you know, that's how we have to approach, you know, the maggot infestation in this country. One day at a time. Yeah, meanwhile, Scott in San Diego says, Rodney Howard Brown, it's always entertaining to hear a lecture on solar science from someone who believes Jesus rode to Sunday school on a dinosaur. Everything everywhere was created in 6 days, and the first woman, presumably without possession of a navel, it's the navel that gets me, was formed from a rib taken from the side. You know, you can't read this without hearing, or maybe you can, I can't. My inner, I read this and I hear my inner W.C. Fields. It's always entertaining to hear a lecture on solar science from someone who believes Jesus rode to Sunday school on a dinosaur. Everything everywhere was created in 6 days, and the first woman, presumably without possession of a navel, was formed from a rib taken from the side of the first man. Next, he'll be pointing out that the sun revolves around the earth. Afternoons, I used to tend bar. It just works better that way for me. Thank you, Scott. No, Jeff, no. Zen cowbell for Jeff in Hell Hole, Indiana. These maggots aren't the sharpest knives in the drawer, are they? Hey, I don't even know that they're... Hell, they're... They're not even much good as spoons, for that matter. No. So, here we are at the end of the second hour of the program. Again, I want to thank John in North Carolina, Stan, for responding to Ralph's Consuela challenge. Consuela's kitten challenge. Thank you very kindly, John. And you know what? Maybe if we could bring in another $30, maybe we could persuade Gary and Gaia to follow up on that matching challenge after all. I don't know. I'm speaking out of turn here. But that was what was left of their challenge last night. And if we could do that, and it worked out that way, we could, that would mean that we'd knock down things considerable like. So, if we can bring in 30 more bucks, you know, I can ask. Marty with a note. Rodney Howard Brown, a charismatic Christian, whiskey tango foxtrot. Yes, a South Africaner. Charismatic Christian is a term of art, Marty. It means prone to rolling on the floor, swigging strychnine, speaking in tongues, pouring oil all over each other, and playing catch the snake. And big thanks going out to Michael in Madison, who said, "Do you need a bumper, Bob? Because Jesus Christ, you've never served me up an easier one." Well, I want to hear this badly. So we'll take a break. Hey, phone lines are open, 304-574-8178. I almost forgot. I've filibobstered for two freaking hours. 304-574-8178. The toll-free number is a little bit sketchy, but you can always get in 844-843-4676 if I happen to see it come in time to click the magic button. And, of course, from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. And that's how you get into the program. It all comes into one line. It's just different means of accessing it. And I'm still considering like doing one of those month to month, you know, buy the little access card thingies to try once more to bring the stress line back to life and see if I can tweak it and engineer it enough to have meaningful phone conversation. I don't know, but we can try. But we need to, you know, with the fundraising thing. Because we're at 485 right now. Tomorrow, prayer meeting Wednesday, 685. We try to raise $200 a night. Sorry to even mention it. If this thing just took care of itself, I wouldn't. But it doesn't. So, yeah, a little break, and we'll see if anybody wants to chat or if I'm going to fill a Bobster for another hour. Either one's fine by me. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob.
Thoughts find myself disposed, brightness fills empty space in search of inspiration. Harder now with higher speed, washing in on top of me. So I look to my Eskimo friend, I look to my Eskimo friend, I look to my Eskimo friend when I'm down, down, down. Rain it away, muddy roads, find myself exposed, tapping doors, but irritated in search of destination. I
It's Tuesday, July 17, 2018.
Governor Rick Scott has declared a state of emergency for seven counties in Florida, and it's all because
toxic algae blooms choke Lake Okeechobee, threatening drinking water and more in the Sunshine State.
A warm June didn't help matters either.
Ohio takes belated steps to curb toxic algae in Lake Erie. Summer night temperatures rising faster than daytime temperatures. Plus, Ireland set to become the first nation in the world to divest from fossil fuels.
Go Ireland! All of those reports and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
So if you see what looks like pea green soup or something in the water that could be an algal bloom, still enjoy a wonderful day on the beach, on your boat. Just don't get in the water.
Just when I thought it was safe to go back in the water. Algae blooms. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, I was a little snarky there about algae, but this is actually a very serious problem.
Yes, toxic algae is toxic, and summer's heat means the return of toxic algae blooms. In Florida, Republican Governor Rick Scott has declared a state of emergency in seven counties because a massive toxic algae bloom has choked 90% of Lake Okeechobee, fueled by fertilizer runoff from the agriculture industry.
Lake Okeechobee?
The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has begun flushing water out of Lake Okeechobee, saying they must flush the lake to lower water levels to reduce the risk of flooding from heavy rainfall. But flushing the algae downstream means that the toxic, smelly, gloppy green goop is headed to Florida's canals, bays, and beaches, impacting tourism, the shellfish industry, and public health. Mm. It's a similar story in Ohio, where after years of resistance, Republican Governor John Kasich signed an executive order late last week directing the Ohio EPA and the Department's of Agriculture and Natural Resources to create new regulations to reduce the amount of fertilizer and manure runoff from farms near the western bases of Lake Erie.
We have to constantly upgrade and do what we can, respecting farmers, they're an important part of our system, but to develop a plan that will keep us from having more algae blooms and doing more damage to that lake.
Now, the state government says that voluntary steps taken by farmers so far have failed to sufficiently curb nutrient pollution. That's the runoff of phosphorus and other nutrients from farms that is the leading contributor to toxic algae blooms. However, agriculture industry groups criticized Kasich's move, arguing that the solution to these repeated algae blooms is unclear. They certainly have stake in it. Reducing fertilizer use could reduce crop yields, and that could reduce profits.
That explains that.
Summer nights are warming up faster than days thanks to global warming, with dangerous implications for public health. That's according to new data from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration that found while daytime temperatures are rising and heat records are increasing in frequency, surprisingly, nighttime temperatures in the United States are rising even faster, at double the rate of daytime temperatures. Sustained hot overnight temperatures give people no opportunity to cool off, especially in regions that are less likely to have air conditioning because they're not used to summer heat. High temperatures kill far more Americans than any other type of extreme weather. Oh, and by the way, warming nights also impact certain crops that require cool nighttime temperatures. But some good news, a record number of Americans now accept that climate change is real. An annual survey of attitudes taken by the University of Michigan conducted during that recent record-breaking heat wave that set new all-time high heat records across the country has found that now 73% of Americans think there is, quote, solid evidence of climate change. 60% now accept that human beings have an influence on how the climate is changing. Both of those numbers are the highest in the history of the poll. It seems like the U.S. oil and gas industry is just not that into offshore drilling anymore. The Trump Interior Department on Monday announced the largest ever auction for offshore oil and gas leases on record for the Gulf of Mexico, and that's despite lack of interest and demand from the oil industry. To the last lease sale just a few months ago, at that sale, only 1% of millions of acres offered were actually taken up by the oil and gas industry. Finally, a major victory for climate action in Ireland, where the National Assembly has voted to make Ireland the first nation on the planet to fully divest its public investments from fossil fuels. The Fossil Fuel Divestment Bill passed Ireland's lower house and is expected to pass the upper house and become law by the end of the year. It directs the Ireland Strategic Investment Fund to sell off nearly $400 million worth of coal, oil, and natural gas assets as soon as practical, but within the next 5 years. It's the most significant advance to date for the international divestment campaign promoted by environmentalists worldwide.
The writing's on the wall. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow us, and share us worldwide, even in Ireland, on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
For you, I have to risk it all. Cause the writing's on the wall.
What's particularly interesting is that all those people are dying from heat-related effects in the middle of a mini ice age. But that, I'm not going to say anything. I can't do the accent about that because. But it's a solar minimum, is what it is—a solar minimum. And Michael, that was pure genius. It's the beauty of the creative process. That I can live on a planet in a time where we can have a story about a hypocritical huckster of a religion industry maniac who talks about his Eskimo friend, and there's a song out there about an Eskimo friend. Or maybe the goddess of irony just kind of loves us all this evening and wants us to be happy. It's 12 minutes past the hour on this Titanic Tuesday, and it has been one. Oh, yes, it has. Let's check in with libertarian ophthalmologist Rand Paul, shall we? This past Sunday, you know, before the treason summit, he declared that the investigation into Russia's meddling in our election is, you know, a witch hunt. Showing up on Sunday, he said, if we have proof that they, Russia, did it, we should spend our time protecting ourselves instead of having this witch hunt on the president. I think we need to be done with this so we can protect our election. Randy, buddy, if the guy to whose benefit it inured is in the pocket of the Russians, we can't protect ourselves unless we do something about him. And went on to say, yes, we had it coming because we do it too. You know, it's interesting, in the last program, Monday evening, Darlene and I, Darlene in Connecticut and I, talked about this very thing. Whataboutism. Precisely. Precisely. But if there's a manifestation of Titanic intellect out there, it has to come from the, and this is not, this is an unpaid this is an unpaid product placement. I haven't seen it. I don't have Showtime. I can't. But just the fact that Sacha Baron Cohen was able to go out there and get white wing maggots to say ridiculous things, well, it's kind of proof that they hold that little bit of madness within them. In this particular instance, he got Republicans to kind of sign on board with the idea of arming toddlers to protect our schools by showing up as an Israeli who had a plan to do that. And there are so many white-wing Republicans. I mean, do we have to say Republicans after white-wing? Do we have to say white-wing before Republicans? I mean, it's all pretty much of a piece now, but oh, this is good stuff. This may be some of the best Titanic Tuesday material we've ever had. Take for instance, cranky old loon Larry Pratt of Gun Goobers of America. Now, this is the organization that thinks the National Ruble Association are a bunch of lily-livered sissy panty wastes, because they're not serious about protecting the Second Amendment. Larry Pratt from Sacha Baron Cohen's Who is America?
Sexuality. They don't worry if it's politically correct to shoot a mentally deranged gunman. They'll just do it. The science behind this program is proven. At age 4, a child processes images 80% faster than an adult, meaning that essentially, like owls, they can see in slow motion. Children under 5 also have elevated levels of the pheromone Blink-182, produced by the part of the liver known as the Rita Ora. This allows
Wait, Blink-182? Really? Sacha Baron Cohen just walked in with a script, and Larry Pratt just fucking read it. Because he said he was an Israeli.
Nerve reflexes to travel along the Cardi B neural pathway to the Wiz Khalifa 40% faster, saving time and saving lives.
When it comes to the safety of our children,
the way to stop a bad guy with a gun
is a good kid with a gun.
A good kid with a gun.
A good child with a gun. Happy shooting, kids.
They didn't know. It would be kind of fun. It wouldn't really be funny if it was people who were in on it who knew what they were reading. But that is some authentic gun goober gibberish from the... Wait, we gotta do that again.
Just do it. The science behind this program is proven.
Science.
At age 4, a child processes images 80% faster than an adult, meaning that essentially, like owls, they can see in slow motion. Children under 5 also have elevated levels of the pheromone Blink-182, produced by the part of the liver known as the Rita Ora. This allows nerve reflexes to travel along the Cardi B neural pathway to the Wiz Khalifa 40% faster, saving time and saving lives.
God, that's good. That needs to enter our lexicon. My Blink-182 levels are low. My neural pathways to my Cardi B are just not, they're just not what they used to be. Holy God. Holy. Dana Rohrabacher. Yes, Flavio, yes. I think Flavio is thunderstruck up there in Wisconsin. The Cardi B neural pathway? They will say and do anything if they perceive that it advances their sick fetish with firearms. Here, for instance, is representing Joe Wilson, whose name isn't Joe. Remember, you lie? Yeah, that he screamed at President Obama. He took the bait, swallowed the hook, and said it himself. Swallowed it all the way down till the hook got hung up in his gizzard. Deep.
themselves in their school might actually make us safer here.
A three-year-old cannot defend itself from an assault rifle by throwing a Hello Kitty pencil case at it. Our founding fathers did not put an age limit on the Second Amendment.
No, they didn't.
No, the founding fathers, well, the framers of the Constitution did not put an age limit on the Second Amendment because they had the common good sense to understand that it took a particular skill set to load and fire a muzzle-loading musket. And it was probably not something that a three-year-old could manage. Of course, the technology has improved over time. Well, I mean, if you want to use the word improved, it's relative. And three-year-olds now can fire weapons. And we certainly wouldn't want them throwing Hello Kitty pencils at the latest God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, etc. Lawful, awful gun owner who wanders into the room. Now, here's the difference. Sacha Baron Cohen also tried to set up Bernie. And he went to Bernie as Dr. Billy Wayne Ruddock Jr. from a website called Truthberry. And he sat down to talk to Bernie about the Affordable Care Act. And he says, I was a healthy man. Then Obamacare came in. I was forced to see a doctor, and suddenly I had three diseases. And Bernie doesn't say anything about the Cardi B neural pathway or anything like that. He looks at him and says, Billy, I don't know what you're talking about. I really don't. Because it was madness. On the other hand, if he had taken Dr. Billy Wayne Ruddock Jr. of Truthberry to one of the many Republicans who tried to take health care away from millions of Americans, well, hell yeah, that's right. And that's why that Obamacare is so anti-American. It spreads disease. This is some. You'd like to have the luxury of being surprised, wouldn't you? But you don't get the luxury of being. We don't get the luxury of being surprised anymore because there's nothing surprising. About anything that comes out of the Republicans' mouth when it comes to guns. Sure, they'll argue that the 3-year-old should be armed because there might be some more of that tasty Russian NRA money coming their way if they do. It's like the old joke whose punchline ends, we all know what you are, now we're just negotiating the price. And by the way, while we're at it, you know, I mentioned the picture of Maria Butina. Butina? I don't know. Russian pronunciation. Who can tell? But the picture of her and NRA Vice President Wayne the Peter, you know, the real power in that organization. But we would do well to remember that the president of the NRA is now Oliver North. And I mention that because the goddess of irony is hard at work. Oliver North is now leading the NRA at a time in which there are substantial allegations that his organization funneled money from foreign governments into a campaign illegally. If that sounds a hell of a lot like Iran-Contra, that's because it is, because the goddess of irony don't miss a lick. So we've got that. All we need to do is give these tykes some damn weapons. Sure. You betcha. Yeah, meanwhile, children are still kidnapped, have still been kidnapped by the United States government. Crimes against humanity have been committed. And was that even mentioned yesterday during the entire treason discussion? Of course not. But it's Titanic Tuesday, and we find ourselves all over the place. And so we should probably check in with Star Parker, formerly of The View, I believe. Who is angry about Gay Pride Month. Recently she wrote, "Gay Pride Month has become a time for LGBTQ stormtroopers to pursue political enemies, not much different from the infamous Kristallnacht in Nazi Germany when Nazi brown shirts took to the streets to smash windows of shops owned by Jews." Not much difference? That's a pretty big difference, Star. But anyway, she showed up on one of these tax-free radio, right-wing, white-wing religion industry blatherfests. And you didn't put the hockey puck away, did you? Not on a Titanic Tuesday, you didn't.
This is serious what we're up against with this now new spirit of trans. And what's really interesting is they keep pushing out this idea, LGBTQ. Okay, we did the L and the G.
This new thing of trans? Is she talking about trance music or is she wait, transgendered people? But they're not people, they're just a thing.
Legalize what we're up against with this now new spirit of trans. And what's really interesting is they keep pushing out this idea, LGBTQ. Okay, we did the L and the G. They legalized marriage for themselves. We're doing the T now, the trans, and this is a big, big challenge in our...
They legalized marriage for themselves? I'll be damned. I had no idea that the Supreme Court justices created the majority that rendered the opinion in Obergefell were all gay. I didn't know we had a single gay person on the on the Supreme Court of the United States. The things you learn.
Society right now. They did the Q where they're changing all of the textbooks, even as low as kindergarten, to reflect that you don't know what you are. You're questioning. But notice they skipped over the B. And there are some that say that this B is going to bombard us with real vileness.
Ooh, B for bombard. Well, I think she's got a date with Sesame Street, don't you?
In our society, if they get what they want, because it's not about bisexuality, it's about bestiality. And so therefore we need to be aware of these things and we need to start fighting them now. And we battle in the voting booth as a society. We do not want to take up arms like the left is trying to provoke us to do right now.
Ah, yeah, that B doesn't mean bisexual, it means bestiality. Because, you know, bestiality means never having to say you're sorry. No, that's terrible. You know, every time one of these little religious maniacs starts talking about anything other than the straight, vanilla, missionary position sex that they really don't like, but have to pretend that that's all they do, we get a deep and sometimes disturbing look into the stuff they do think about. And here's a hint. If you're talking about if you're talking about LGBTQ issues, and you get to the B, and the first thing you think about is bestiality, I'm willing to put an Abe Lincoln down on the fact that you're probably a freak, and not a particularly healthy one at that. Bestiality.
We want to battle in the voting booth so that we can get the law, the public square, back in order with the scriptures.
Okay, back in order with the scriptures. Well, you know, we keep having these legislative battles in the individual states where, you know, about every year when the legislatures start meeting, there'll be a story that comes out. Well, Louisiana refused to ban bestiality again. 14 years or so ago, I remember a story about a politician who was fairly well known at the time, who bragged about his first sexual experience growing up on a farm being one of having sex with a mule or something. I remember it well, too well. But so she wants a national law against bestiality? That's the stuff that's allegedly better handled by the states. And oddly enough, the states that don't want to pass laws against bestiality are not the states that she thinks are full of the, you know, heathens.
It's never having to say you're sorry.
Yeah, I did. Right. Agnes just hollered, it means never having to say you're sorry. Never mind. Forget that.
Mm. You're not saying, though, that officially the B in LGBTQ stands for bestiality. It still stands for bisexuality, but you're saying that some are using it in that way.
Or at least I hope the hell you are, because I just said that for you, and I didn't put a question mark on the end of that because there was no upturn to the... Right.
We're almost out of time, by the way.
We don't know, because remember, they said that the Q meant queer, that they were just mocking
themselves.
Oh, I
see. Now it means question.
And we found out that, no, that it didn't. When we moved to that point to legalize now trans, they moved to the point to where every textbook has to be rewritten because it...
You know, isn't it interesting that she's talking about legalizing trans, and yet I'll bet this woman wears pants most of the time? I'll bet she wears button-down shirts that are supposed to... I'll bet she puts on the raiment of a man, like it says not to do over there in Deuteronomy or something. Put not upon the raiment of a man, lest thou be taken from the city and stoned outside the city gates. Dude, stoned, not the good kind. Mm-hmm. We've legalized trans. That's gonna come as a real knee slapper to the various transgender people who just about every week are beaten or killed in this country. I guess we haven't legalized it that good yet.
Didn't really mean Q. queer, it meant Q questioning. And that's why now if you send your kid to these government schools, they're going to learn in kindergarten that it's okay to question your sexuality. So we're not sure what they mean by B. What we do know through the studies of Ryan Anderson from the fellow at the Heritage Foundation is that they are already in Washington trying to rewrite laws to where marriage laws are no longer about wedlock, they're about wed lease.
Wed lease? May I leverage just a little piece of cultural verbiage and suggest that when she says we don't know what the B stands for, it means bitch please!
Oh, my God. We don't know what the B means. What, wed lease? Does that mean... Hey, you know what? Do you have any idea how much anguish and pain this we could cause, we could save ourselves in this country if we treated marriage like we treat contracts? You come to the end of the term of your contract and you either renew or you don't renew. No hard feelings, just decided not to renew. You know, like they say in corporate America, we've decided to go in a different direction. But these people can't talk about marriage without talking about God. It's the same thing with them in abortion. When they talk about abortion, they have to talk about their religion. That means they're trying to foist their religious beliefs on the rest of us, even if we don't want it.
Instead of having monogamy, they want monogamish, and the other one is instead of couples, they want thruples. So we do know that there is an agenda, and we do know that there has been discussion about bestiality in their closed doors.
Now, how do you know if the doors were closed there, Star? I mean, what is Maria Butina going to those meetings too? Jesus, jumping Christ. Let's take a little break here and run over to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
I don't know. Is that, you said her name is Star Parker. Didn't she used to go by the name Star Jones?
I'm not sure. Might be two different, might be different stars. Maybe I got them wrong.
Okay, well, when you wish upon a star... Actually, I won't sing that song. I'm just wishing she would shut the fuck up. I mean, she's perfect for Titanic Tuesday, but good God, there are limits on what people can stand in terms of the, you know, the relentless stream of nonsense.
What's a thruple?
Pouring forth out of,
what's a thruple, huh? Scott, what's a thruple?
I guess that's one in front and one in back if you're anatomically equipped to do it or have it done or whatever.
Is that what Eddie Murphy was talking about all those years ago on Saturday Night Live when he said, come on, y'all, let's make a buckwheat sandwich?
No, I think you're thinking of something else. Because he couldn't get Darla and Alfalfa to play, or was it Spanky? It was one of the Our Gang kids. I don't know. Word comes from the New York Times and some other media outlets, and it seems fitting that we'd find out about it on Titanic Tuesday, perhaps the grandpappy of fake news. And I have in mind John A. Stoner, the author of None Dare Call It Treason. Remember, did you ever have the pleasure of reading that piece of work?
No, but I know what you're talking about.
Oh, God. It self-published in 1964, this fellow, Mr. Stormer, seems an appropriate name, you know? Jesus. There were communists under every bed with that guy. And I posted on the Horn Facebook a link to the obituary and also a follow-up link in the comments having to do with just how riddled with nonsense this thing was. And it makes Trump look like a truth scholar, which gives you a rough idea of just what horseshit None Dare Call It Treason was. And back in the late 60s, I had a morning paper route, the Washington Post, and God bless her, Mrs. Diller was one of my customers, sweet old lady who went to an independent Bible church and somehow was a subscriber to the Washington Post. I don't know how she reconciled that. But one year for Christmas, she bought a Washington Post official Christmas calendar from me and gave me as a little gift this a copy, a little paperback copy of None Dare Call It Treason. Oh, Mrs. Diller. Mrs. Diller.
Well, I looked it up just trying to find out a couple of, you know, little factoids about it.
Yeah.
You're right. He self-published it, but then it took off like it had rockets on it.
Oh, like a herd of birds. He latched into that...
into the Goldwater campaign.
Oh, yeah.
In your heart, you know he's right, but in your guts, you know he's nuts.
There you go. AUH2464.
He sold a million... So what do you back in 1964, what do you reckon it went to, or 1962? What, a dime a copy, a nickel?
According to the graphic in the New York Times, I think on that second story, the cover price was 75 cents. Yeah, paperbacks used to be that cheap.
And a million copies at 75 cents. That's $750,000, isn't it?
Well, yeah, which...
And that's $750,000 in 1963, 1962 money.
Yeah. Back when we had silver in the coin.
I think, so what does that work out to, about $4-5 million today?
I can look it up on the inflation calculator if you want.
No need. I've been doing a lot of that lately. I've been rereading the Travis McGee series by John D. McDonald.
Yeah,
there's a lot to be gleaned out of that. John D. McDonald is a fine writer, and he makes some interesting cultural observations that make it worth going. Otherwise, it's very dated. I can't imagine what it would be for like a millennial. Maybe I'll convince one of my kids to read it and tell me if they think it's just Dad, that's stupid. But you know, phones that are attached to wires and sit on desks.
Yeah.
A world without internet and televisions that are grainy and black and white.
Didn't you post about one of those McDonald books?
Yeah, I did.
On your I made a book note a bookmark of it. And I'm going to have to add that to my reading list, that book that you initially mentioned.
Well, because, you know, because it spans, it's an interesting story in and of itself. John D. McDonald had been with the OSS during the Second World War. And by 1962, by 1963... he was quite successful. He had a whole bunch of crime fiction novels under his belt, but he wanted to do a series. He wanted to do a character. You know, Philip Marlowe, that kind of thing. And so
yeah.
he wanted to invent a character, but he was originally going to name him Dallas. But then Dallas happened.
Yeah.
And so Dallas became not a good name, and he named his protagonist Travis McGee after Travis Air Force Base in California. And
it
picks up the first three novels were published within a single year, but then it becomes like a time capsule. And there's a novel published every year and a half or so, up to like 1984. And so you get to see not only a writer's development, but the progression of the character, the aging of the character, and the shift and changes in the culture.
How many books in all are in that series?
Ah, God, 20 or more?
Oh, Lord.
And they've all got a color in them. The deep blue goodbye. Long lavender look. You know, I mean, it's crime fiction. It's kitschy. But if you look at...
Sue Grafton, I believe, was the author of that same genre that did A is for, B is for...
Yeah, that was a sort of indirect homage.
Yeah.
But it's worth the effort, and they're really good stories.
Well, when you mentioned Dallas,
it's the Hardy Boys with booze.
Oh wow! Now I love those Hardy Boys books when I was a youngster. Ooh, baby!
Oh, I did too, and I had versions of them because the woman who wrote them all started publishing them in the late 1920s.
Yeah.
And I had received as a gift a collection of them from that era. And I had to look up things like Roadster. And I had to look up the biases, you know, because back then you didn't, you know, there was a dictionary and I had to, Roadster, okay, Roadkill, Roadster, no. And I had to find out what, you know, every time she referred to one of the Hardy Boys' friends as olive-skinned, the hell did that mean?
Yeah.
And it got updated through the years, but if you had the original ones, you were reading back in time. Maybe that had something to do with my fascination for that sort of thing. It started early.
Well, I love having grown up. My Wonder Bread years basically were the 1960s, and as crazy as they were, I don't think I would trade them for any other time frame, simply because of how interesting they were. And you know, people like John A. Stoner, Stoner might have been more correct. John A. Stormer, notwithstanding, you know, the 60s were a positive time. There was a shift, a perceptible shift going on, you know, tied in, I guess, with the new frontier of JFK's abbreviated administration, you know, and we really thought that maybe we had turned a corner into something exciting and possible and positive and doable, you know? And when you mentioned Dallas McGee, was it? The original character name? Another chunk of trivia about that word is, if you've ever seen Dr. Strangelove.
Yes, of course.
Which I know you have. There's a great scene when they've gotten the order to go bomb their designated nuke sites in Russia. And Slim Pickens, Major Kong, is...
Okay, trivia moment. What's the primary target?
Oh, God. I probably know, but it's fogged up due to the heat.
Laputa. Laputa.
Laputa, yeah.
Which, of course, in Spanish is something entirely different.
Yes. But he's on the intercom with all the other members of the crew breaking down the contents of the survival kit. And after he lists them all in the final film that we all have seen...
Wait, hold on. Because I want to get it.
Okay, I was going to do that, but I figured you'd beat me to it. In that lovely Slim Pickens voice.
Let's see, something. List. Yeah, here it is. Your checklist. You ready?
All right. Yeah.
I bet there's going to be an ad. Hold on. Nope.
survival kit contents check. In them you'll find 145 caliber automatic, 2 boxes of ammunition, 4 days concentrated emergency rations, 1 drug issue containing antibiotics, morphine, vitamin pills, pep pills, sleeping pills, tranquilizer pills, 1 miniature combination Russian phrase book and Bible, $100 in rubles, $100 in gold, 9 packs of chewing gum, 1 issue of prophylactics, 3 lipsticks, 3 pair of nylon stockings.
Shoot, a fella could have a pretty good weekend in Vegas with all that stuff.
Was that what you had in mind?
Yes, that's exactly it.
Yeah, but you want to know where my mind goes?
No, where?
Because, there's always a risk of overanalyzing comedy. But I get a laugh out of it. There's one condom, but there's 3 pairs of nylons, 3 lipsticks, and 9 packs of chewing gum. But it's the 3 pairs. It's the 3 pairs of nylons and the 3 lipsticks. So the Pentagon had come to the conclusion that your average downed B-52 crewman was only going to bat 300.
Yeah, there you got to figure strikeouts into the.
It's only going to bat 150 if you figure he's not giving out the nylons and the lipstick together, Scott. the Pentagon says he's only good for like a 1 in 6 chance. But the combination Holy Bible and Russian phrase book,
Russian.
Yeah, that's got to be a real Lulu.
Yeah, well, and the thing that I was going for was in the original reading of the line, was a feller could have a hell of a time in Dallas with all that stuff, and because of the production time frame of the film. And Dallas having occurred, and I'm not talking about the Larry Hagman TV series, the original Dallas, they thought better of keeping it the way it was written. But another thing to overlay, when you talk about the strikeout factor, that they based the contents of the survival kit on, Robert Strange McNamara, Secretary of Defense in that era, had come to the Kennedy administration from Ford Motor Company, where he was known as a number crunching, staticizing, chart displaying whiz kid, I think was what he was known as, whiz kid, in terms of breaking down everything into its essential parts and quantifying everything. And he tried to run the fucking Vietnam War that way, with graphs and charts and, 8x10 color photographs with circles and arrows and paragraphs on the back of each one. And that's no way to run a war, really. But now I want to watch Dr. Strangelove.
It's never a bad choice. I would suggest an evening of Dr. Strangelove and the Squidbillies.
Oh, I gave up on the Squidbillies, trying to find a way to make that thing work. I don't know what setting I have on my Chrome and Safari browsers, but it's blocking me somehow or another.
Well, the B-52 Survival Pack, Irish Dave says, it's like comedy then, a matter of timing. Meanwhile, Ron and Raleigh points out, Dr. Strangelove was the earliest appearance of James Earl Jones. Slim Pickens had a brother also who did movie work. His name was Easy Pickens. Now, I don't know if that's a joke or not.
That can't be. Well, maybe. But getting back to the original mention of John A. Stormer, I keep wanting to call him Stoner.
Dude.
And I'm as sober as you could possibly be. I wonder what he made of Trump, given his book, None Dare Call It Treason, and the, you know, Russian / commie fear-mongering that he was doing in that book. I looked in the obituary thinking that maybe he dropped dead after yesterday's two-hour meeting or whatever it was and joint press conference. It just finally keeled over. But apparently he had fallen ill a year ago, so maybe he saw the handwriting on the wall a year ago.
No, I disagree, because he was a rabid old anti-communist. If you ask any of these freaks, they'll tell you, "Well, Putin's not a communist." That's why this talking point has developed that we're not adversaries, we're competitors. You know, they make washing machines. We don't. You know, no. Well, okay. They make cars. We make cars. It's bullshit. It's a mindset that runs from the earliest Tsars consolidating power in the Kingdom of Rus all the way to the modern age.
Well, my thinking on that, communism be damned. It doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things whether or not he is or was a commie, that bastard. One needn't be a communist to be a dangerous adversary. And to my way of thinking, oligarch is way worse in so many other ways than communism could ever be, at least practically practice communism or socialism or
I don't even like
Marxism.
To say the two in the same breath, because there's not a nickel's worth of similarity between what the Soviet Union was and say what Sweden is.
Yeah, of course.
So, I mean, to me, there's a vast gulf of difference that's obvious to people like you, me, the Horn Family Community Congregation, and utterly incomprehensible to a maggot. In the waning time we have here, Bill in Allentown says, if Scott wants to answer, do you remember where you were when you heard the news on November 22nd, 1963?
Oh, God, yes. I was a fourth grader at St. Mary's School in Old Town Alexandria in Sister Ambrose's class. And our principal, Sister Helene, who was from Texas, came over the PA system and told the boys and girls she wanted our attention, please. And at that point, when she made the initial word, she said, "Our president has been shot." And being good little Catholics, we all stood up and, you know, grabbed our beads and started praying. And then a little while later, I don't think they announced his death, though. I don't think she announced his death over the PA. I believe Mrs. Godfrey, the school secretary, went from classroom to classroom and came to the door of each classroom and summoned the teacher for a hushed conference. And the teacher, I'm not even sure the teachers, the nuns or the lay teachers, announced the death of the president. I think they said basically, you know, at such and such a time, we'll be closing school for the day. We're just waiting for all the school buses to get here. And I remember going home, and my dad was working. He was a 24-on, 24-off firefighter. My mom was watching the coverage on TV. And at the time, this is a long answer to a short question. but it's so vivid, even now, in my memory. I had an afternoon paper route, the old Washington Daily News, and normally the papers would be at my house by 3:45 in the afternoon, 4 o'clock at the latest, because I think you had to have them all delivered by 5. Well, it was after dark, but it was literally a stop-the-presses moment for that newspaper and many others around the world. And I don't think I've been quite as confused and frightened on a cold November night walking the dark streets of my little paper route. And every customer wanted to stop and talk. Nobody was mad that you were so late getting the paper to them. And there was a sense of community and wonderment, astonishment, bewilderment. And everybody wanted to connect, as people do when madness occurs. And I think we kind of need to latch on to that sense of coming together and somehow combating the bewilderment that we're in today's world, and be about the mission of not allowing the GOP to retain control of at least the House, and hopefully the House and Senate. I mean, my teeth are into this thing coming up in November, and I will not shut up until we land on the deck with the mission accomplished banner behind us, that we've done at least that much to forestall any more devastating madness. Especially after yesterday's performance by Trump. Good God. I'm rarely speechless, in the sense that I am gobsmacked, literally gobsmacked. And then to hear you talking earlier about, he's written in the margin, no collusion, and has struck through a line in the text. What was the line? Did anybody know what that was?
Yeah, Horst provided it to us.
Brought to justice. That's right. I forgot. Yeah. I mean, can you believe this, Bob? I mean, I believe it. Anything's possible. I was going to quote Bill Hicks when you were talking about you can't explain this stuff to a maggot. I was watching a thing on, I guess, Netflix or Amazon the other night, a stand-up that he did, and an expression he used is so apt for today. Trying to explain what's going on to a maggot, they will get that look on their face like a dog to whom you've just shown a card trick. You know, that head cocked, his master's voice kind of quizzical look. And that's why I discount those people in the sense of trying to enlist them to do anything, because they're not going to do anything that's reasonable or makes sense or is, you know, in the best interests of our country and our world. They're beyond that. They're over that. I'm going to concentrate on anybody who can be influenced to wake up, start paying attention, and just get their asses in gear, get their heads out of their asses and their noses out of their navels, and be part of the solution, or at least part of the solution, instead of wringing your hands and clutching your pearls. And I'm preaching, so I'll shut up, because I don't want to keep you all night. But you know I could.
Oh, look, yeah. I mean, I made a very deliberate choice in trying to go back to some of our standard, if you can even call it that, Titanic mm-hmm. Tuesday fare. Because it's Well, it screwed with me yesterday what I heard.
Yeah. I mean, it kicked it up into another orbit because you figured, you know, it was going to be at least amusing on some level to watch his latest performance. But it's like, you know, occasionally everybody will do something right. If by accident, sooner or later, the law of averages will account for an accidental doing of something that's right. This guy is a lost soul, for lack of a better term. He's, looking back over 50 years, when None Dare Call It Treason was first written, and it wasn't the first instance of this right-wing, ultra-right bullshit. That stuff has shown up in one form or another throughout history, as you well know. And one wonders, I mean, some saw it for what it was, logos many years ago, and called the author out on it and called out the people who actually bought into that horse shit. And some of it was pretty innocent, far-fetched stuff that hardly anybody with any sense is going to believe anyway. But now you've got people who claim to be intelligent folks, I mean, who at least had sense enough to vote twice for Obama in 08 and 12, who actually switched over to the likes of Trump.
Yeah, I maintain that there aren't that many of them.
And it's like, well, some did.
Yeah, no, there are some, but they are not they are cited as a sort of holy grail standard among the purity patrol. But there's just not that many of them. I mean, God knows there weren't that many of them in West Virginia.
No, that's true. But what I'm
and
saying
the fact
is
and the fact that Bernie won the Democratic primary by the margins that he did doesn't indicate that there's any sort of great progressive groundswell in West Virginia either.
Right.
Because everybody seems to forget that in the weeks leading up to the primary, Donald Trump stood at a maggot rally in Charleston and said, "Don't bother voting for me in the primary. I've got it locked up. Go and vote for Bernie."
Yeah, well, yeah.
He did that.
But
and they followed his orders.
I know.
The good UMWA hardworking union miners went and voted for Bernie because Trump told them to, and then in November they voted for Trump like they'd planned to all along.
Well, it's just a warning shot that we are so off kilter in this country and now the world that we really need to get a fucking grip and convince and influence those who are convincible and influenceable. Because this stuff is going to, it's going to be the end of us all.
Well, Darlene in Connecticut has a pretty good analysis here. She says, the pattern with Trump seems to be that things are only going to get worse. He keeps outdoing himself, which is the hallmark of a narcissist who craves drama and attention. And mm-hmm. I don't disagree, but you know, with anything along those lines, there's a point at which you get to, you know, the center will not hold. The centrifugal force begins to pull everything apart, and you know, and then the other more current aspect of it, Scott, is for him to say, well, whatever it was I said, whatever it is that you've got a recording of me saying, actually saying, I didn't say. So today he misspoke. Yeah. What, he didn't understand the good English that was being directed to him? Who do you side with, your intelligence community or that guy?
Yeah, that's not misspeaking. That's being a horse's ass in the worst possible way.
No, it's being a Russian agent.
Well, yeah. There's,
sorry, I'm not being cranky
that.
With you, but I'm convinced of it. Nobody's going to pull me off that hilltop. The man is in the pay of the Russians. He is doing the Russians' bidding. He is a traitor. He is engaged in an ongoing pattern of treason. And any further proof of it is simply gilding the lily.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I think that's a good way to wind this up if you're ready, because I'm telling you, after yesterday, it's encouraged me, it's energized me to raise some hell over this and do whatever I can do to keep things from getting any worse, because you know they will if we don't. They may even if we do. But you know doing nothing is not an option. So,
well, it may provide some encouragement to you. I saw a post from Sparky in the chat room earlier. Protest treason. There are mass demonstrations outside the White House for the second night in a row. Tonight we demand accountability, said Attorney Michael Avenatti, who is set to speak at the event. This nightmare for the United States should be brought to an end.
Yeah. Well, and that I know it, take it from a child of the 60s. Showing up and making noise and not being destructive while you're doing it, in the sense of tearing up shit, it is a viable means of theater. And I don't mean to speak lightly when I say theater, because really, it's all in today's world, it's a battle for the attention span of people. There's so many goddamn diversions and ways to occupy our eyes and our ears that are all in competition with one another, that you've got to, you know, it's almost like Jerry Rubin and Abby Hoffman, guerrilla theater on the streets of Chicago, which didn't end well for them, but it sure as hell got the point across. The reaction was prompted by Daley and the Chicago police, and as a result, a commission and a panel was formed, which highlighted some of the rotten underpinnings in the city's police force and the city government of Chicago generally. And I should say, looking at our current state of things in Chicago, with this most recent shooting, things haven't gotten a whole lot better up there.
No, it's very hard to make things better in Chicago because you can't keep the guns out because of places like Indiana and Southern Illinois and Southeast Wisconsin. Yeah. Well, Scott, good conversation to round out the program. We've gone over a little bit, but it's been a dandy.
Okay, I'm going to dig up Dr. Strangelove.
I think it's a good idea.
It shows the very worst that could happen.
Listen,
if we don't do something.
If you're not who you say you are, you're going to have to answer. If you're not who you say you are, you're going to have to answer to the Coca-Cola company. Now, see here, Colonel Bat Guano, if that really is your name.
Yeah.
Sorry, had to. Scott, have a good evening.
All right, Bob, take care.
Later now.
Bye.
Our buddy Scott in San Diego. Last word goes to Ron in Raleigh. Sweet jumping Jesus on a whole wheat cracker. Every day my life is assailed with more incredible nonsense and bullshit. I can hardly stand to turn on the media. The longer Dolt 45 stays in office, the crazier shit gets. Soon, we will no longer be able to have rational conversations because a large number of people won't believe in science or how things work in the real world. Sometimes I just sit with my mouth agape listening to the things that people believe. Signed, Ron, in Raleigh. To which I reply, welcome to my world. And that's the program for tonight. Thank you very kindly to Ralphs for the challenge, and thank you very kindly to John in North Carolina, Stan, for meeting it. When we next get together tomorrow, the fundraising goal will be, unless it changes overnight, $685. So I say that in hopes that it will change. And as far as Scott and Sweden's challenge goes, it's got $535 to go. As we move into the second half of the month of July. Thanks to all of you who share in your precious finite time engaged in this program. Thank you so much. Thank you to the to those of you, a subset of that group, who also keep the program on the air by keeping the bills paid. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Billions of hours of progressive radio served and never sent a bill. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.